There are men and women in this meeting who are willing to take others through the 12 steps. If we can be helpful or useful, please reach out by sending us a chat message or unmuting yourself at the end of the meeting and asking for numbers or letting us know that you are new. Please let us know if you are new or in pain and want a new experience. We wish to be helpful. Thank you for being here. It would be very helpful to mute yourself when the leader is reading and sharing to limit feedback and background noise. If you cannot, we will mute you all while the leader is sharing. Please do not be offended. This meeting will be recorded, audio only, and available if it can be useful to anyone. Please let us know and we will share a recording of it with you. We will begin with one reading from our basic text and then a prayer before we get started this evening. This is the first paragraph of the foreword as it appeared in the first printing of the first edition of our basic text in 1939. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all.
All right, everybody, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer, and then we're going to get moving. God, please help us set aside everything we think we know about ourselves, about our illness, about the big book, about the 12 steps, and especially about you, God, so that we may have an open mind and a new experience with all of these things. Please help us to see the truth. Amen. Again, tonight we have Chris coming to us from Texas. He's going to lead and rock with us for till about 7 o'clock. And we are starting, we'll be right around the second full paragraph on 52, that paragraph known as the bedevilments. It starts, we had to. And Chris, I'm muting us and you are unmuted and the show is yours. Thank you again, my man.
Thank you. I'll try to keep it on track. My name is Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. And God, I'm glad to be here. Looking at some of those names on the list, we got a bunch of guys. There's a few of you in there I know real well and haven't seen in a million years. That's the advantage. This Zoom stuff's pretty cool. You know, you get to see some people from all over. And I just want to give you a little rundown real quick, and then I'm going to jump into that book. I'm talking from a little rock house. I'm in my little office down in Ingram, Texas. All the flyers out there always have me in Dallas, Texas. That's my twin brother. I'm in Ingram, Texas, where it's about as country as you can get down here. And I'm right on a road out here. It's 5 o'clock here in Texas and a bunch of cars. So it'll sound like that I'm talking from the middle of a freeway, and I'm not. So just, it'll die down in a minute. Don't worry about it. I struggled real hard. My first attempt in Alcoholics Anonymous, my first meeting was in the early 80s. And nicest bunch of people you'd ever come across. And I'm not going to tell my whole story. Most, you know, a lot of you have listened to it anyway. But I was in and out for a bunch of years trying to get sober. And never to be critical of Alcoholics Anonymous in any way. But, you know, some of the groups out there, you know, the last thing that we got to see in those groups where I was this little thing called a Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was, literally, you could go into a meeting and never see a big book. I didn't know what they were. you know, they read how it worked from a little plaque, you know, a little laminated piece of paper, and the steps from the traditions on the wall, but we didn't, nobody was carrying big books, nobody was talking. I know there were some studies out there, folks, I just didn't know where they were or what, I didn't know anything about them, so I spent a bunch of years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous and trying to, I needed to get well, I was not having a very good life, and anyway, 87, I ended up back in after a stupid suicide attempt, ended up back in the rooms of a meeting where somebody had actually pointed out it was a big book group. They were actually reading all the topics were out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just, you know, I didn't know what that was, but it was convenient. You know, I was detoxing and just wanted to go by a meeting and then I was going to go on home. And so I stopped at that meeting and it changed my life. You know, I walked into a room full of people that all had big books in their lap, and they were all coming out and talking about the solution. And I just, you know, I owe those old guys my life. I got to tell you, there's a few guys that got around me that night, qualified me, opened a big book after that meeting, and I picked up what was going to be my last chip. That was November 13th, 1987. It was a Friday the 13th. So my 13th is still our lucky number. And I don't know. They opened the big book the first time I'd ever had anybody poke my nose in there. And they started showing me the circle triangle in the front, what we used to have. And then they started talking about the first step stuff. They started talking about the physical craving and the mental obsession. They qualified. And one of the things that they talked about in that little meeting was they showed me the benevolence. Because they're asking me the question, why is it that you can stay sober for a short period of time and then things start coming undone on you? And I just get miserable. That's my MO. I'll tell anybody. I can stop drinking on a dime. I mean, for years, I don't need to go to treatment. I don't need to go to detox. I could just quit. But I can't stay quit because about 2 weeks into this for me, I start getting crazy. We're just fixing to read the bedevilments. And that's once I understood what that was about, it kind of changed things for me. I want to bring something to your attention because I'll forget to do it in a minute. The unmanageability that the big book is talking about, you know, in the first step, it talks about unmanageability. You're not talking about your external world. Everybody wants to go there. Go into any AA meeting, anywhere you want to go, and say, let's talk about unmanageability. And I guarantee you the first person to share will talk about their credit cards or their kids or their life or all of the external. What Bill Wilson's trying to explain is the internal. Untreated alcoholism, spiritual malady, and untreated alcoholism are all the same thing. Folks, I I've worked in the industry a bunch of years and, you know, long, long time. And I've watched a lot of people not drink and drug one stupid day at a time and shoot themselves. Just not drinking doesn't solve my alcoholism. It doesn't treat it. It's a start. Dr. Silkworth in the front, y'all already read, it talks specifically about needing to do that. We got to get physically detoxed so the craving goes away. But guys, once we do that, it's just a matter of time before this internal discomfort starts to come back and kick our butt. It can be really frustrating for some people that don't understand it because they put the plug in the jug and they think everything is okay. They go to treatment, they learn a lot of cool little things, and they leave, and then they wonder why 2 weeks later they're drinking. Because they simply didn't do the things necessary to treat that internal stuff that we need to treat. It's not okay just not to drink today. If I can't get to a place where I can be happy, comfortable in my skin, I'm not going to stay sober. And Bill Wilson, he paints a pretty good picture here. I'm going to mention, because we're going to try to read to the end of this chapter at least, so we're going to make some tracks in here. It's in a chapter called We Agnostics, which a lot of people, especially people that believe in God, don't usually read. They skip over it because I believe in God. But there's some really good stuff in here. It's kind of a frustrating chapter for me to read sometimes because I get Bill Wilson is so kind, that loving and tolerant. To the agnostics and the atheists, way more so than I am. I'm just going to say, I love everybody. But I get a little frustrated sometimes that we have to tiptoe around people's sensitive little feelings. I was in a in a meeting not long ago. It wasn't one of our meetings, but it was another meeting. And this lady had said, and you hear it all the time, and I'm going to just say this real quick before I forget. Guys, I'm going to share my experience with this, okay, and my experience with working those steps. If it's different than yours, just okay, you're right and I'm wrong. Okay, I'm not here trying to, you know, I'm not going to get on any soapbox, you know. I am right, you are wrong, but I'm just going to say, just kidding, but I always hear it, anytime you want to start talking about the next chapter of agnostics, second step, third step, there's always somebody in there, always somebody in the room that'll say this. Well, if they had talked about God when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't think I would have stayed. And everybody nods their head like this. Guys, it just drives me crazy. The fact that we didn't talk about God, how many thousands of people have we killed? Because we're tiptoeing around somebody's sensitive little feelings. Guys, everything in the book is geared to push us towards a thing called a spiritual experience. The 12 steps don't get me sober. If that was the case, this would be a self-help program. The 12 steps get me spiritually connected. You can't work the 12 steps and not have a spiritual experience. My experience. I was taught that from a lot of people, folks. A lot of people understood that. You have this thing called a spiritual experience and the obsession to drink this. And you get placed in the, excuse me, position of neutrality, safe and protected, like the big book talks about. So I'm just throwing it out there, guys. I think we do a lot of the newcomers. The assumption that the newcomer can't stomach the idea about a spiritual experience or God is just that. It's an assumption. At best case scenario, it's confusing. Worst case scenario, it's deadly. We only have one message to carry. That's the message of hope to that alcoholic. And if we're going to not tell him how we get well because we're afraid we're going to offend him, we're not doing anybody any good. This program is unapologetically about God. And then Bill wasn't so open and roomy here, guys. I know I could hear him in there. I can't hear him, but I can hear him. He's so rigid. I'm not. And Bill Wilson is saying that he's not either. I mean, he's so loving and kind. He says, buddy, we're fixing to read it. I'll shut up. Okay. Look on page 52 if you've got your book. I got my little pocketbook without the stupid stories in the back. So you can read along if you want to. I got a little horse in the throat, guys. I got a little cough drop here, so that's what I'm putting in. I'm not taking drugs or anything, but it ain't the virus. We have to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Now then, I'm going to read these bedevilments as he lines out, and I'm going to discuss each one of them, just for grace. It won't take just but a second to do, but I just some thoughts that my first sponsor kind of broke down for me. We were having trouble in personal relationships. Ask yourself the questions. Are you having trouble in personal relationships? I never knew an alcoholic out there that didn't have trouble in personal relationships, but I want to ask the question, how about the one with yourself? Because I don't think personal relationships is, you know, how am I doing with my relationship with Jack? Okay, I got that. But how am I doing with the relationship with myself? I'm going to tell you guys, I don't know how many people's in this room right now, but I'm going to say, you know, if I treated you guys in this room, this gathering, the way you treat yourself, they would arrest me. I don't care. You're the most stable, well-balanced person in listening to this talk. You beat yourself up on a regular basis. I watch people come into treatment all the time, and it's just they're their own worst enemy. Pessimistic, antagonistic, just self-esteem, you know, just miserable. Ask yourself how you're doing with yourself. We couldn't control our emotional natures. How's that one? 1 minute you're okay, you just left the meeting and feeling the power of God, everything's good, you just pull out on that little road, little guy's driving a little slow, and you're flipping them off, come on you someday, you know, it's like, oh, Mr. Spiritual, yeah. I put a little circle triangle on the back of my pickup truck, so it reminds me not to flip people off on the road. So I'm 32 years sober, and sometimes I am not spiritually fit. Patty and I have imaginary bazookas in the car with us, so I'm just saying, we need them sometimes. We were prey to misery and depression. How's that one? The number one symptom of untreated alcoholism, folks, is depression. Guys, that's just a fact. Depression. We medicated treatment all the time. You can't walk into any treatment center out there without getting an antidepressant stuck in your butt. And I'm going to tell you guys, a lot of people, there are a lot of people out there that need them. There's a such thing as clinical depression. Most of us are not clinically depressed. Most of us are suffering from untreated alcoholism. You will be depressed. Pretty good. We couldn't make a living. Doesn't just mean can you make money. How are you doing with that money? Are you enjoying what you do for a living? That's a tough one, isn't it? We had a feeling of uselessness. How many of you can relate to that? I get all those, I see all the hands in that place. Yeah. Feeling of uselessness, guys. Bill Wilson says on page 62, he starts talking about selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of the problem, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity. Y'all get it? He starts talking about this self-pity. This is what kills alcoholics. I've watched more people relapse around self-pity than anything else. It's untreated alcoholism. Take away the alcohol, and this stuff starts to come back. Because that's what it treats. Your families are always freaked out when we talk about this, guys, because they think if you just stop drinking, everything's going to be okay. They don't understand. I got a friend of mine up in Massachusetts says, if you're a hard drinker, then detox is as hard as it's going to get. If you're an alcoholic, detox is just the beginning. It's just a bear after that. So, great, great, clear point. We were full of fear. Bill Wilson on page 67, 68 talks about it. It was the evil and corroding thread. No shit. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be any real help to other people. That feeling of uselessness again. Was not this basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. Guys, all of that stuff internally, that's what's got to be treated. And it's not going to be treated. I'm not trying to be irritable here with anybody, please. The only thing that'll treat that is this spiritual connection. If you work the steps, this is going to change. It can't not change. If all you're doing is going to 90 meetings in 90 days, you might not get the experience that you're looking for. I'm not knocking that saying. I'm just knocking that saying. It drives me crazy. Meetings are so important, friends. Meetings are so important. I'm not knocking that. We're in one now, and I'm going to be blessed because I was here, and hope y'all are too, because of the, I'm just saying, this idea that you got to be in a meeting 24/7 in order to stay sober is crazy. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work, but the God idea did. That beautiful prayer that Jack read before, that y'all read before, I mean, come on. This set aside for this idea of having a new experience, let's open our minds. Drives me crazy when people come to treatment. I hate God. Okay, all right. Well, let's work the steps. No, you're not understanding. I don't like those Christians. I don't think I be quiet. Shut up. Be quiet. Nobody asked you. Who cares? That's so, the book is so beautiful. God is you understanding. You want to make God a little Easter bunny, then go right ahead. All right. I'm not going to argue with you. You got to find something, folks. That's all the book is trying to say. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted the rights would never fly. Yeah, logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It is not the chance we are given the power to reason. Excuse me, it is not by chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses to draw conclusions. That is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to the reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present path is reasonable, why we think it more sane and logical to believe than not to believe. While we say our former thinking was soft and mushy, when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. I mean, gosh, this is some good stuff here, guys, because Bill Wilson's just, again, he's just trying to explain. We're not asking you to just come along dogmatically about this. He's saying, sit around these rooms long enough, work these steps, and you're going to get evidence that there's a power greater than yourself out there. Something's going to change. Guys, if I couldn't feel the presence of God in my life, I wouldn't be talking like this. I wouldn't be pushing this idea. I would be pursuing something else. All I know is that miracles can start happening if you'll open your mind. This next paragraph is what we call the second step proposition. It's pretty simple. When we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. He, she, it, whatever you want to call it. God either is or he isn't. What's our choice to be? Mm. Holy moly. I mean, Bill Wilson and those first guys that were writing this book, the people that helped him write it, they were as black and white about this as you could possibly be. It didn't say, figure out what this God is. You know, make a list of all the attributes you want God to have. Come on, God. It didn't say, he said, do you believe there's something out there bigger than you? Yes or no? Well, I don't know. Okay, fine. Never mind. Bye-bye. Because it's okay. Y'all think I'm being real rigid about that. But it's just true. I hear people in meetings, I'm working on step two. It's one question. Do you either believe that there's something out there? Nowhere in there does it say you have to have it figured out. Thank God. Because my idea of what God was has changed so drastically in 32 years, it's not even funny. My spiritual path, I'm sure would be different than a lot of y'all in the room. But I'm convinced I'm blessed. I'm watched over. I'm convinced. And this happened as it got active in the work. Some things started really changing in my life. And I'm not the last one that says you got to believe like me. It's just Bill Wilson's open. A guy named Sandy B down in Florida. A lot of y'all knew him. He was a big speaker for a long, long time. He's passed away a while back, but he was a great guy. He's got a little great book out there if y'all can track it down. Wonderful book. But he talks about it from the podium a lot. He says, you don't have to find God, but you got to look. Which is so good. Come at this. God will meet you where you are. Just come at this with an open mind, and you're gonna find something. I guarantee you. I've never known anybody that would. The only people that won't are the people that are so absolute arrogant they'll cross their arms and won't even look. I was talking down in Louisiana one time. In a little group down in Louisiana. And my host, this lady that was there, and she asked me before I started talking, I was doing a little step study, and she said, Chris, if it's all possible, could you maybe possibly not talk about God very much in this? Because we have a home group member that's just not down with that. It just irritates him when he hears about that. And I just looked and just made a mental note. Holy shit. I'll find out which one she didn't point him out. Of course, I flushed him out of the room because we talked about God. You know, we just exactly like we're doing right here. He got up, I don't think flustered, made this big scene of leaving the room. You know, how cool is that? Good riddance. Everybody walking on eggshells. Just drives me nuts. Sorry. I hope he's okay today.
Sorry. We'll see.
Around this point, we were squarely confronted with a question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason towards the desired shore of faith. Great analogy. The outlines of the promises of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out and welcomed. We were grateful that reason, with capital R, had brought us so far. But somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we'd been leaning too heavily on reason the last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. Pretty cool. That was natural, but let us think a little bit more closely. Without knowing it, had we not brought to had I can't read, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What is that but sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, objectively, faithfully to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. Exclamation point. Bill's excited about this, guys, because he's surrounded by atheists who had found God. I got to mention this real quick. If any of y'all, because I was just thinking about it today, if any of y'all get a chance, get a copy of the old stories. I forget what AA's version of it, Experience, Strength, and Hope, I think it is, but it's a compilation of the first edition stories in the back. In the first edition, second, all the editions, they changed them every time they printed a new edition. But the first edition stories were really good because they all talked about, they talked about spiritual experiences is what they did. But if you'll read the first story in the first edition, it was written by, it's called The Unbeliever. It was written by a guy named Hank Parkhurst that helped Bill Wilson start Alcoholics Anonymous. He should have been one of the co-founders. This guy was brilliant, but he was a dying rule atheist. We never would have got the big book printed if it hadn't have been for Hank Parkhurst. And he stayed sober quite a while, but then he got loaded. And wonderful guy. But if you read that story, read it by yourself sometime. Get alone by yourself and read that story. I got to tell you, it's one of the most moving stories in the big book. Mm-hmm. This guy coming from a place of absolute, there is no God, to a place of, yeah, there probably is. You check it out if you get a chance. Anyway, where was I? We found, too, that we'd been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring us, bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? God, he makes a great point. Little or nothing, we saw it last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Mm. Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. True. Imagine life without faith. Exclamation point. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet, there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling onto the destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seem to be more intelligent than that, at least so the chemist said. Hence we saw the reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. It would emanate from our best minds. What about people who prove that man could never fly? Oof. Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible. And we all smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, of other things, but in some form or other it's there, for faith in a power greater than ourselves and the miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found. It was so with us. Did y'all get that paragraph? It means you don't have to fly to India and go talk to some guru over there to find God. You can, but ultimately you're not going to find it in the Himalayas or in a church, or it's still so personal. It's internal. Go out tonight. kind of chilly here in the hill country. Go out wherever you are. I know you guys up north, y'all are real men and women up there. I don't know how y'all do it with that cold. Go sit out in the backyard for a few minutes. Watch what's left of that big old full moon we had last week, and breathe in and breathe out a little bit. Look around in nature, and just for a second, get quiet with the possibility that there's a creator there watching over us. And you may roll your eyes and not even do it. But see, that's the problem. Most of us won't do that. But I got to tell you, it's deep down inside is where you're going to find that power, that awakening. That's where it comes from. Open your mind to the possibility. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice. Bill Wilson in these chapters uses the word prejudice over and over and over, because that's exactly what it is. It's prejudice. We were raised in a church we didn't like or had it forced down our throats, and we just made up our mind we weren't going to listen to it at all. We're being prejudiced. Same stupid prejudice that I don't like certain people, come on, it's prejudices in this world. We have to open our minds. It's a much better world when we do. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. Do you see the word broad highway? It means, guys, you're not walking on a tightrope. The spiritual path, especially in the beginning, is open and roomy. Make a stab at this, folks. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart, dramatic, convincing, and moving. True stories. I happen to have a bunch of friends that are archivists and, you know, historians. You know, it's this first story here we're going to call is our friend was a minister's son. This is a guy named Fitz Mayo. He was one of the early guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the first 100 there. His story's in the back of the first editions. I don't know if it's still in there or not. It's called Our Southern Friend. I know it was in the first few editions. Read the story. It's pretty good. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended church school where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration. Business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. Golly, I watch and see some of you guys and what y'all been through before you got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just like Fitz. I don't know how some of us survived, truly. I'm sure honored to know you. One night, when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. I want to make a clear point. Fitz didn't go look for an alcoholic who had had a spiritual experience. He was approached. This is called a 12-step call. Some of y'all might have read about that. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there's a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself the question, "Is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong?" While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, the great thought came. It crowded out all else. Ugh, makes me want to cry. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God. It poured over him and through him, and the certainty and majesty of a great tidal flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from the bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in the conscious companionship with his Creator. Thus was our friend's cornerstone fixed in place. You got the picture of the arch, guys. You got that little rock arch, and you got the keystone up at the top that keeps the arch together in the corner. That's the third step, is the keystone. We're going to fix and read about it. Y'all will read it next week or whenever y'all get together again. Cornerstone is that right down the edge next to the foundation stone. The foundation stone, I'll cut to the chase, is working with others. It's the 12th step. That's a good trivia question because some of you guys will miss it, because for years I thought the foundation stone was the first step. Mm-hmm. Because Bill Wilson spends 60 pages in the book talking about that, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. The steps are outlined in the first 100 pages. 60 of those pages he talks about the first step. I get those little geezers out there always. There's no one step more important than the other. Yeah, I think so. They're all important, guys. But Bill Wilson really wants you to know, because once you understand the first step, guys, truly, that you're convinced that you're one of us, you will have a much wider understanding, a much more open mind to this stuff about God. Buddy, once I found out that I really was an alcoholic, that I wasn't just verbally, I'm an alcoholic, once I realized, damn, I have a fatal illness called alcoholism. I became really, really teachable, really open-minded about doing this work. I'm not going to mince words about God at that particular point in time. When all of these people say it's going to help, I'm going to do it. He stepped from bridge to shore. Boy, that's great. Thus, our friend's cornerstone was fixed in place. No later vicissitude has shaken it. Ups and downs, guys, vicissitude. His alcoholic problem was taken away. That night, years ago, it disappeared. Save for a few moments, brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink never returned. At such times, great revulsion had risen up in him. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God has restored his sanity. Guys, real quick, that's what God's trying. That's what this whole point of this spiritual experience is supposed to be. I've sponsored a lot of guys. My experience was when I got to a place when I was willing to actually make a commitment that I'm going to work the steps at a pretty fast clip, that these guys are taking me through the work with the intent of having this thing called a spiritual experience, the obsession lifted from me. I was sober right after 2 weeks, sitting on the tailgate of my pickup truck in North Texas, and it dawns on me, I've got a completed 4-step, and it dawns on me that the obsession to use is lifted. It's never returned in 32 years. And guys, I'm going to tell you, I'm the guy on page 21. I am the real alcoholic. And I know a lot of you in this room are. I know a lot of you are the same, that same cat. It's just like, you don't have to wait till you finish all 12 steps to have a spiritual experience. Most of the people I know, it happens to, the minute they start opening their mind, that obsession starts to leave. The cats that get out there and start making their amends, I guarantee you, I've never known anybody that didn't have a spiritual experience. So you can lose it again if you stop doing the stuff you're supposed to be doing. I'm hip with that, guys. You're not. But Bill Wilson's making a pretty clear point. God has restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe. What circumstances? Just damn crappy life. His alcoholism. Yeah. You're not going to do this work unless you've got these circumstances coming down on it. He humbly offered himself to his maker. Then he knew. Understand. I hear people all the time. I had a guy in my office the other day saying, he said, Chris, I really don't think I'm an alcoholic, but I'm going to work the steps anyway because I think they would help me. And I said, they will. There's no question. But I've never known anybody that worked the steps that didn't have to work the steps. They weren't compelled by their circumstances. They don't. They all do it. They do a little prayer. You know what? Then they start working on a little 4-step, and you never hear from them again. You know, because they're out. They don't. When it gets down to actually dumping a 5th step, you know, look at making amends. Oh my gosh, no! And then going to be of service to mankind, to helping your brothers and sisters on this earth. They don't do it. The threat of dying is like a cancer diagnosis. I think I'm just going to go get chemo. I don't think I've really got cancer, but you know, I'm going to go. No, it doesn't happen like that. You got to have a reason, for heaven's sake. Even so, God has restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but it has come to all who has honestly sought him. when we drew near to him, her, it, whatever your belief is, he disclosed himself to us. Guys, there's no true words in the book. Go at this with a humble heart. Ask for some guidance here. And I guarantee you, you're going to start, you're going to feel a difference. You're going to see a difference. Both Fitz Mayo, just a note, and Jim Burrell was another one. He's one of the guys that helped with this idea of God as you understand it. He was an atheist from hell. He just hated God. And both of them were buried up there in Owensville, Maryland, in the same cemetery together. They lost track of each other for a long time, but they ended up in the same cemetery, and both stayed sober a long time. So I don't know. It's the absolute best. I gotta mention something real quick. So the old timers used to say it. It's just an old quote somebody showed me. This is not like a study, but just pray with disbelief, but pray with sincerity, and belief will come. I'm not a big one for fake it till you make it, folks. But if you'll get on this path and earnestly, just like Fitz did there, just like I don't know what God is, but show me what that power looks like. Then certain things are going to start changing. And I think anybody that tries to lead you away from that is doing you a real disservice, because it's not that difficult, folks. Bill Wilson, I think, has been a beautiful chapter, and I think he later on, we get over in 62 and 63, it starts talking about the third step prayer, and that whole prayer just obligates us to bear witness to others. Bill Wilson's talking about, you want to find the nearness of your Creator, you want to get closer spiritually, grow spiritually, go work with another alcoholic. Guys, I'm going to say it too, and if you don't want to work with an alcoholic or an addict and other fellowships, whatever, go help somebody. Go over today and just go knock on the old lady next door, the next door neighbor's house, and see if you can mow her lawn for her. What a pain in the butt that is. Yeah. You will be changed by that event. You will start feeling the presence of God. When you're taking care of a brother or sister in this world, trying to help, it doesn't have to just be an AA. But Bill Wilson says it on 13 and 14, but excuse me, 14 and 15, he gets real clear about growing spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others. Guys, just, you don't have to believe. Some of the hardest people we get in treatment are born-again Christians who think they know it all. They've lost complete contact with that power, but they intellectually know all about God. Knowing about God and knowing God are two different things. You can know a lot about God and be disconnected as hell. We treat millions of them. But when you start doing this work with a humble attitude, even if you don't believe it'll work, it'll change you forever. That's pretty good, guys. That's where I'm at. Anybody want to share in there?
Thanks a lot, Chris. That was awesome, man. If anybody wants wants to use the raise your hand thing on your phone, or we got about 10 minutes somebody wants to hop in.
I've never figured out how to do that.
Yeah, well, go. You don't need to, which is good tonight. You know what I mean? We got you. You're alive and living color. Anybody want? There you go. Hey, there he is with a thumbs up. Look at this guy. How about, all right, let's see. Let's call.
Bill sent that to me. Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
Where's,
They all got quiet on us.
Yeah, they all got quiet on us. I know.
I'll ask a question.
Awesome. I love you.
I'm Cleo. I'm an alcoholic. Could you point out, where in the book it talks about the 12th step being the foundation?
Mm-hmm. Yes. But it may take me like maybe hour, 2 hours.
Well, somebody else has their hand raised.
Yeah, we got some more questions coming.
And I'm going to keep looking because it's in there. Yeah. It's on page 97.
Wow, Ricky D, too. Ricky D texted that quick, too, man. Big Rick. There he is, man. Philly coming in swift. Okay, let's go. We got Larry and we got Larry and Meredith. I'm going to unmute you now. Go right ahead.
Larry, alcoholic addict.
Hello.
Hey, Chris. It was great to hear you. I've listened to your tapes on YouTube for years, and it was just a real good experience. What I wanted to talk about was, finding the great reality deep down within us. So many times, when I come in, I was a meeting maker for years and I could not stay sober, surprise, surprise. But I remember when I was praying, I'd always pray to like the guy in the clouds with the beard and the harp and, and it didn't seem to work. So I just said, this is a bunch of, bull crap, and I threw it out. But the book talks about something very different, how to make a start. And, and that was like searching from within, and, that goes on to the third step and making, whatever, regardless, I'm getting sidetracked here. But I really, really like that it gave me a starting point, and I had to start searching from within instead of from without, and that's all I really wanted to say. Thank you.
Perfect.
Thank you, man. Yes,
perfect.
Martha's Vineyard, you're up.
Hi, Suzanne, alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Thanks, Chris. I just wanted to reiterate an important line for me in this reading, back on page 52, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was one of those people that knew a lot about God, but I didn't know God. But I watched people, and especially my sponsor, and I watched her rely upon that power. And it still is attractive to me today. And I think, that principle is what can help attract people to this program. If we witness, like you talked about witnessing to people, but I sat in meetings for a long time and just watched people. I didn't want any of this for me. many, many years, got really, really sick. But, just that line is just really important to me, is to see the proof in other people help me develop that personal relationship that I continue to grow today.
Thanks.
So good.
Perfect. Thanks, Chris.
We got Liz Higgins in Philadelphia. Go for it.
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. So much, Chris. It makes me like so happy to hear somebody that's not making excuses for God. And I definitely don't. But I know that when I first got into the program and I would hear the same thing, it would, I would get all angry and think like, how can people do this and not acknowledge God? And now I kind of have this feeling when somebody is not there yet, right? Because there's people who have it and people who need it. I just think like they're in for a surprise, and I'm not going to be the one to blow the surprise party because I have more faith in God that he's handling their situation too, And it just fills me with angst when I start to feel like it's my job to convince you of my spiritual experience. Because if I'm really having it, my spiritual experience should be able to meet you where you're at and live my program and show you what it can do from the inside out, really. And that doesn't mean I do that perfectly every day. Like, I get pretty intolerant sometimes, but I do always believe at the end of the day that God has got me just like he's got everybody else that's going through this process, and we're all going to be okay, When I have that positive attitude, I don't, I don't seem full of myself, because I can do that a lot. I can feel like I have all the answers and I know God and, you know, maybe I'll introduce them to you if you're nice to me, but that's just not the way it goes, you know? Yeah, thank you so much, and God bless.
Yeah, bless you. Jack, can I say something real quick?
Yeah, man.
But what she just said is so beautiful, because y'all are getting crystal clear on what we're talking about. Nowhere in the book does Bill Wilson want us to go jam, you know, you got to find God, you got to, you know, we're not there preaching, and I'm not going to talk about, my job is not to worry about your soul or convert you or whatever, and conversations later downstream, if you want to visit, that's fine, but this works as well for any faith out there you'd ever want to come across. It's the idea, just like she was saying, just not talking about it at all. We're just going to avoid the topic altogether. And it's the solution, so we can't really do that. You know, Bill Wilson said, you know, it's like water on a horse. You know, you lay it down, you show them what it is, and if they want it, great. And if they don't, then just we go on. We don't have to change our program for them. You know, this is what works, and we know what works. And, it's just absolutely beautiful. Thanks.
Amen. Thank you, man. Danny Storm. Go ahead, bro.
Hey, my name is Dan, and I'm Raleigh. Thanks for sharing, Chris. I've heard a lot of your tapes, and really appreciate the I want to say enthusiasm, but you know, you don't dance around the idea of God, and I think that's very important. So neither do I. And you know, back when I first did my first second step, my book wasn't very, you know, it lays open now, but it was very crinkly when I first did it. And I was just flipping through the pages, and that line got me, that italicized, who are you to say there's no God? Because that was basically me. You know, who am I? You know, I'm just a normal, run-of-the-mill kind of guy. And, you know, it's not really a question. It's kind of my experiences. I took second and third step completely blind. You know, it was that proposition. You know, my sponsor did the 2 pages before, or 3 pages do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe there's a power greater than myself? You know, and he asked me that question. He said, do you believe in God right now? And I said, I don't know. And he goes, are you willing to believe in God, any power greater than yourself? And I said, yeah, sure. And he said, great, let's go to step 3. You know, and that was as simple as it was.
Yes.
Cleo brought up the whole thing. So I have my wonderful spiritual experience drawn down here that I drove in 2017. And I have step 1, and I do a big book study myself, and I just flipped because I thought about the foundation thing, and I just drew this one a couple weeks ago. Step 12 is my new one with the question mark. I didn't know. You know, and it's crazy what you find in this book, man. I think it's incredible that Bill wrote this book with, 3-4 years of sobriety, something with so much depth and weight in it that can, you know, change people's lives, you know. So for me, you know, step 2 and 3 was to take it completely blind. And by the time I got to step 10, I had, you know, a spiritual experience somewhere in there. I just know that the obsession was gone. The feelings, the position of neutrality, those 10-step promises were completely fulfilled. The 9-step promises as well. But, you know, the 10-step ones, that position neutrality is the one that was fulfilled after I took a blind step 2 and 3. You know, that spiritual program of action is where that idea of God kind of got solidified in my mind. So I really appreciate you sharing, and you know, thanks for doing this, man. It was great. It's great to finally put a face to the sound. You know, you sound the same, but now I know what you look like. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, brother.
Diego Boston.
Diego Alcoholic. Thank you, Chris, for sharing. I actually have a question. In step 2, when I'm working with others and they tell me that they don't believe in God, I ask the question, well, are you willing to, we'll do the set-aside prayer, and then if they're willing to believe, typically we just move on, and then more will be revealed. Is that something that you would do, or would you spend more time trying to drill in the God idea, or is the willingness enough?
Yeah, it's a great question. It kind of ticks off of what we were talking about earlier. All the book is asking, are you willing to believe? If they are, then let's work the steps. Because what happens is, in the process of doing that, as you know, things start changing. These little coincidences, quote unquote, little miracles start happening. Our lives start opening up, and there's things that change. And if they're willing to believe, buddy, let's go. If they just flat out say, no, absolutely not, I'm not willing to believe there's a power greater than myself. I don't believe in God, never will believe in God, that's it. That's okay, well, that's good. You want to get a hamburger? Because we're done here. And we're going to go, I'm going to love you to death. I'm not being critical. You don't have to believe in my God. Guys, I mean, I'm serious. If I told you, I didn't say this, I'm a Christian, okay? But if you have any idea what I believe in, you know, little angels and possums are my spirit animal. And I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, if I talked about, I know, click, click, they're leaving the meeting. We scared them all away. Guys, it's my path. I love it. And it's just, I'm guided on here. I'm comfortable with it. And that's where everybody's going to, I believe it's going to be different than Jack or Cleo's going to believe. And that's what the beauty of this. We're not trying to jam this down anybody's throat. Every atheist out there, every agnostic out there, we need in our fellowship. We need them in these rooms helping us carry the message. We absolutely do. If they want to make that group their higher power or whatever, I'm not going to split hairs. If they're willing to believe something out there is bigger, then they can get this. The little guy that's just defiant, I'm not going to believe in anything, then I love it, but I'm not going to waste time doing the work with somebody that's not even willing to do it. Just not. And I got to say this real quick, 32 years sober, I've sponsored hundreds of men over the years. I mean, come on, lots of people I've sponsored. I've only known maybe two that I can think of off the top of all the guys I've worked with that were just defiantly, I am not going to believe in anything. Two in all those years. There's just not that many of them out there, guys. They're hurt. They want some help. And they'll open up. They'll have a little bit better. If you want to start preaching to them and trying to convert them to your brand of religion, you'll lose them in a heartbeat. Bill Wilson understood that really clear when he wrote the book. So that's all.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for your question, man. We got a couple hands left, but we only got 2 minutes. So it looks like Jason, you're gonna get to go last, man. Jason Trimble.
And I just love hearing old timers like yourself. And you know, I was just thinking when you were sharing about the bedevilments and stuff, I'm grateful for guys that keep it simple like that. You know, as far as me understanding the unmanageability of my untreated alcoholism, I spent 20 years in and out of prison, you know, trying to get sober, hitting the rooms of recovery. And I always had a sponsor, but nobody could explain to me. My problem was is that damn sobriety. You know, every time I'd get sober, the bedevilments would crop up, and the next thing I'd back out. And yeah. So just grateful to hear that, because that when I heard that, when I first heard that this time coming around into the rooms, I'm just celebrating 7 years now. That was the turning point. It made sense. I could buy into that, and that was what really was kind of my, piece that really got me going with the recovery. And I loved what you said today. I picked up something new today, where you were talking about that our foundation is that 12th step. You know, I always thought that the foundation of that archway was the rock bottom that we hit as mm-hmm. well. But I appreciate you saying that. Because it makes complete sense, you know, getting involved, getting into your recovery, just like the prayers talk about, it's getting rid of these things within me that are blocking me from being useful and being able to carry this message effectively. So anyway, I'm grateful. I listened to you on YouTube, and, I've picked up a lot of things throughout the years with guys I work with and stuff from some of your big book and working with others and stuff like that. So thanks for everything you do.
Oh, buddy, bless you. Hope you stay close, buddy. Hope you stay close.
And all right, it's 7 o'clock on the dot. Chris, I guess, how Jason ended is probably a lot of us can echo that. You know, yeah. It's just thanks a lot for everything. Thanks for tonight. And thanks for all the time that you've dedicated. I think a lot of people on here have probably used a lot of stuff. I know that I have, and that there's people on here I've been able to work with that have benefited from stuff that you've brought. So thanks, man.
You've got my email. Make sure any of these little knuckleheads that want to get in touch with me, you're always welcome to give them my email.
Got it.
Step information or any just history stuff. I've always got a bunch of stuff. I'm sitting in front of computer shit every day. So would love to stay in touch with everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Chris. We're just going to ask if you could just take us out in whatever prayer you want to. Guys, I dropped a Venmo in the chat in case anybody wants to give anything. We're just going to send it to New York every couple weeks. Tomorrow night we have Judy L. Cleo, sponsor from Colorado, will be on. And then Friday, Dane, my sponsor, will be doing it. So thanks again, Chris, so much. And if you just lead us out in a prayer, we'll get out of here. 7:01, 1 minute late.
There you go. How about the Lord's Prayer? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come.